All right, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. I'll be back with y'all in just a few minutes.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerers of death's construction. In the fields the bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning our brainwashed minds. Oh Lord, yeah, politicians hide themselves away. They only started the war. Why should they go out to fight? They leave that role to the pawn. Time will tell on the power minds. Making war just for fun, treating people just like pawns and chess. Wait till their judgment day comes. On the knees of war pigs crawling. begging mercy for their sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings.
KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Good evening to y'all, or good morning, or good day. Whomever you might be, wherever you might be, welcome to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagen. It's good to be here with you all tonight, and I'm very excited about the show. But first, as always, a quick thank you to my good friend, Corey, New Wave Radio Theater. Once again, Jack Flanders doing it up in a story about the Fourth Tower of Elsinore. I hope you enjoyed that program. Always wonderful way to get things going here on Monday night with the Little Radio Theater. And before that, of course, Kelvin, and tonight, Dr. Jason, doing it up. Jazz plus blues equals no one knows. Tech Radio at 6 p.m. They keep us up on the outrageous world of high technology. And Jeff Wheeler starts things off with Uncommon Light every Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. Good music, good talk, good news. Another cold Monday night. Will spring ever get here? I'm so ready for it. But at any rate, it is a cool Monday night once again. And full moon a few days ago. Next one around the equinox, but this last one was amazing. I hope you all had a chance to get out and see the lunar eclipse that occurred, about 4 days ago now. Was it Thursday night, Friday night of last week? And just amazing. You don't get that opportunity very often. A full-on lunar eclipse during a full moon, of course, in North America, though, and visible to pretty much everybody in these latitudes. So that was cool. And like I say, full moon coming up again in about 22 or 23 days, and that will be right around the spring equinox on the 21st, 22nd of March, okay? Anyway, as always, good night to snuggle up here with Radio Orbit, the 25th of February. You're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. Glad to be here with y'all and a part of it. Okay, thanks to everybody who joined in with us last week. A huge thank you to my friend John Major Jenkins. A thrill to do an in-person interview with John. We've been friends for some time, but this was the first time we actually had the opportunity to have John here in Columbia and with me here in the studio. But that was great, and I had a wonderful time. And John stayed out at my house for a couple days, and we got a chance to talk, late night and drink beers and, just sort of spin yarns together. But it was really a thrill, and he's an amazing guy and certainly somebody who should be looked to if you're interested in the Mayan calendar or anything else about that amazing culture that existed many years before ours. Okay, Bartholomew Bean also. Thank you to Bartholomew Bean for his wonderful music. Bart provided the great tunes for last week's program. And, also I want to remind everyone, if you missed it or if you didn't, we did this thing on Tuesday night as well. The night after the show last week, John did a oral presentation of a bunch of his material down at the Blue Fugue on 9th Street, and it was an event that was open to the public, and a whole bunch of people showed up to see John talk, and I was so pleased that those of you who came out did so, and it was a great pleasure to meet some listeners to the program who I had never had the opportunity to meet before. And got to hear John talk, and just hang out with a bunch of cool people that are sort of hip to this whole 2012 business, or at least interested in it. And it was a really fun night, and we got to stay out a little bit later afterwards and all just sort of socialize and talk amongst ourselves and, mix and match. But it was really a fun night, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate John making himself available for it, and also to Ben and Scott and Lindsay and the whole gang down there at the Blue Fugue that made it possible for us to do it without charging any money or anything like that. So anyway, as always, I appreciate all the help that we get from the people out there that make a lot of these things happen. And this time no different, okay? So wonderful stuff. John Major Jenkins, that interview from last Monday is up on the web. You can check that out, download it if you like. And if you want to hear some of the music, you can zip on over to the music archives of my website at MikeHagan.com. And you can check out Bartholomew Bean and lots of other musicians that have been on the program over the last few years, okay? All right, if you missed the program last week, or any other for that matter, you can always hear them ex post facto. They're all on the web as well, MikeHagan.com. Just go to the program archives. You can take a look around in there. I got a wooden nickel that says you'll find something you like. And if you do, you know, maybe share it with someone else if you get the notion, okay? This thing that we did at the Fugue was recorded also via video tape, and I think that it's actually going to be aired on Cat TV sometime in the next month or so, I'm hoping. But thanks to the people at Cat TV for coming down and filming that as well, and for letting us use the camera or whatever. I'm not sure exactly what the connection was there, but I know Bartholomew Bean, again, was involved with the filming, and I know that Cat TV was involved in it. So anyway, great stuff, and if I can get the audio, maybe I'll share it with y'all on the radio here, the radio show sometime, okay? Anyway, okay, so let's see. Tonight at the midnight hour, back with us, Richard Alan Miller. Richard has been on the program a few times previously, and always interesting, always generating voluminous response from all of you listeners. Tonight we'll be talking about magic and alchemy, and that may also include some talk about shamanic technique and modern concepts of physics. So, Richard Alan Miller in just a little bit, okay? We'll do space weather and a few other things before Richard joins us, and we'll hear some music from the past and some new stuff that we'll hear more of in the future. We started the show off tonight with an amazing cover of the classic Black Sabbath song, War Pigs. It's performed by a young man named Finn O'Loughlin. Finn has been featured on the program back in December, and I will do so again in the next few weeks. I think he's just awesome. And that song just gives me the chill every time I hear it. But anyway, Finn O'Loughlin, that's from a CD that's called Spawn of the Beast. All right? Meanwhile, we will play something else, something new that I don't think I've played on the program before. And we'll come back and get things moving after we do that, okay? All right, let's do that. We'll play one here from a band called Shelter Belt. And let's see if I can get this worked here. Yeah, this is a song that is called Surface. And again, the band is called Shelter Belt. We'll hear some more from these guys in the future. And we'll hear this one right now.
Wayless, and as lost as I'll ever get, I hope you respond. I hope you learn. It's real cheap to forget. I never mind the way we all gather around, waiting for you to burn this town. You believe. we reach out for better days. Sad minds and darkened faith, when all we needed was a moment to breathe.
Great song there. That's called Surface. It's by a band called Shelter Belt. I'll feature them sometime in the next month or two. Anyway, good evening to y'all. Right back at you here. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. If you want to have fun and be of help to young people, Big Brothers and Big Sisters are hosting a fundraising event called Bowl for Kids' Sake at the AMF Town and Country Lanes in Columbia. That's Friday, February 29th, Leap Day. Through Sunday, March 2nd, the whole weekend, I guess. And you can get information, if you need more, at 874-3677, all right? Okay, good to have you all here with me tonight, and I'll say hello to everybody listening, wherever you are, on KOPN over the traditional airwaves, or if you listen over the Internet, if you listen to the show live or otherwise. Every Monday, we broadcast a show from the perfectly adequate studios of KOPN in lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri, high atop the Dalton Building, and we stream the show live as well on the web at kopn.org. Go over to that website and click on the Listen Live button, and you'll be able to hear the show from anywhere on the planet, as long as you've got a decent Internet connection, okay? Speaking of the net, thanks to Larry Norger, the web wizard. A big thank you to Larry, as always. You never know what he's up to, but most recently he's working on a new design for the website. It's been quite a while since we did anything with the site, and he's putting his creative genius to work. And if you go over to my front page at mikehagan.com and just click through to the main page there, or whatever your bookmark has it, you know, it'll redirect you to the newest incarnation of the website, even though it's not quite tweaked yet, but it looks pretty cool, and it'll give you an idea for what we're going to be looking like over the next year or so, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how long it lasts. Sometimes they last a long time. Sometimes they don't. So we'll just find out how you guys like it and how Larry and I like it, okay? Anyway, it's really cool, and I like the way it looks so far. So thank you, Larry. I appreciate everything that you do for me. This guy's an amazing person and an incredible artist of many different varieties. He can do website design like nobody's business, of course, but his digital artwork is incredible. He's an amazing photographer. He's a musician that is, without many peers, at least. And he's also a really nice guy and a really good friend of mine. So, Larry, thank you so much, my brother. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And, it's just been a pleasure to be able to work with you since we've, hooked up, a couple of years ago now. So, anyway, thanks as well to everybody else out there sending art, music, poetry, literature, lots of stuff on the website. And now that we're making some changes, we'll probably get some of this new stuff up there. So if you're an artist of any variety, get in touch with me, and we will figure out a way to share your art with other people. Find a place for it on the website and make it available for anyone else to see who's interested, okay? All right. If you'd like to see what I'm talking about, zip on over to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. Take a look-see and let me know what you think. You can always get a hold of me through the website and through email. And if you go there, you'll have access to everything we're doing, no passwords or registration required. And I appreciate when you share thoughts with us. So you can do it right there at the website. Now, we also have a forum, a bulletin board, that's always interesting and always busy, lots of interesting topics always being put up and discussed and debated and thrown out and all kinds of stuff over there. But it's an interesting place that's always changing, and that happens, sort of around the clock. There's always people in and out of there posting news stories and interesting things from science and technology and the nature realm, all kinds of different stuff. But that's at the forum, once again, over at the website. Now, there's a live chat room that's up and active, as always. Thanks to Chaos for getting that whole thing together. And you can join other people that are listening to the program right now and sort of having their own sort of radio show goes on right in the middle of this one. And just following the chat is quite interesting. And it's really cool that they post all the chats up in the forum, because you can read the chat that's gone on over the course of the program. And it's very interesting to see what people are talking about as they're listening to the show. And oftentimes there are really valuable links and information that's being passed back and forth between people that are in the chat room. And it's great to have that stuff in the archives, and it's sort of a compliment to the radio program for sure. Or maybe the radio show is a compliment to the chat. I don't know. It's really cool, though. So anyway, I'll do my best to peek in the chat room tonight and say hello to everybody and look for questions and comments from all of you over there, okay? I always encourage my guests as well as my listeners to join us over there in the chat room and also the forum. It's a great way to communicate with like-minded or otherwise individuals, okay? All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. You can send email to me. Same thing goes for the guests and musicians that appear on this program. Everybody likes to hear from you, and, and maybe you like to hear back. So it's sort of a, give and take sort of thing. And because I don't know what your email address is, you'll have to send me one first. So it's orbitradio@AOL.com, and like I say, the guests and the musicians that are on the program, they make their information pretty readily available as well, and love to hear from you, okay? Okay, let's see. It's about 25 after the hour of 11 p.m. now, 25th of February, 2008. Still winter time. I tell you, I keep thinking the spring's right around the corner, but it doesn't appear so yet. It's cold and nasty and spitting rain and ice, and just been a long winter. But I'm feeling a lot better tonight than I have been over the course of the winter. Turns out I actually had pneumonia, and I'm finally on some pretty badass drugs, and taking care of myself and getting the right stuff in my body and getting the wrong stuff out of it. And I actually have some energy, and I can breathe, and my nose isn't all stuffed up, and my lungs are starting to feel better. And anyway, I'm all feeling better, but I don't know how long it'll last. I haven't had a very long stint of good health this winter, and I'm very much looking forward to the spring. So, enough about me. Let me tell you a little bit about who's going to be on the program over the next few weeks and months, and then we'll do space weather, and I got a few people that I'd like to remember that we'll talk about in just a bit, And then we will have Richard Allen Miller. At the top of the hour, midnight, straight up, perfect time to talk about magic and alchemy. We'll do it with Richard Allen Miller. He can do it like nobody else, trust me. And 35 minutes, I'll prove that to you, okay? Okay, space weather. Yesterday, something behind the sun's northeastern limb exploded and blasted a big cloud into space. This is probably indicative of a sunspot that's going to be coming over the horizon very soon. And if so, we should have some interesting activity on this planet with regard to the magnetic field and aurora borealis and all that sort of stuff. The sun has been remarkably quiet, actually, since the beginning of this most recent solar cycle, and really not a sunspot to be seen for quite some time. But we'll have to see if this most recent event is a new phase in this particular period. Okay. I mentioned the lunar eclipse just a little bit ago. It was an amazing event, and I'll tell you a little bit about it, some sort of details, okay? This is in regard to the lunar eclipse that happened, I think it was last Thursday night, okay? This is from spaceweather.com. They say, shadows are supposed to be dark, but when Earth's shadow fell across the moon last week, the result was rather bright, says atmospheric scientist Dr. Richard Keene of the University of Colorado. On the scale of astronomical magnitudes, the eclipsed moon of February 20th, 2008, registered a negative 3, almost 1,000 times brighter than classic dark eclipses such as the one of December 30th, 1963, which followed the eruption of the Agung volcano in Indonesia. What he talks about here is that the eclipse was exceptionally bright because the stratosphere was very clear. And in contrast to the eclipse from 1963, which occurred right after a volcano had blown a whole bunch of ash and aerosol stuff up into the upper atmosphere, that lunar eclipse was much darker. But it's been a long time since there's been a major volcanic eruption, and the stratosphere has been pretty clear, apparently, since about 1995. When the aerosols from Mount Pinatubo, the eruption that happened in 1991, settled out. And at any rate, it appears to be getting more and more clear with each eclipse that we get to observe now. So it was a beautiful and amazing thing to watch in the heavens up there. If you've never seen an eclipse before, I hope you had a chance to see it last week. It was brilliant and certainly you know, something to make you think a little bit further out than the surface of this planet. Okay, what's happening out there in the world of science and technology and space? Tomorrow, a lecture in Fullerton, California, Colonizing the Moon and Mars. How? When? Good questions that probably should have been answered or may have been answered long ago. I think Richard Allen Miller would probably have something to say about that. But I will not ask him because we're going to stay on topic tonight and talk about magic and alchemy. So anyway, Richard could talk about it for sure if we wanted to. The 26th and the 27th, the 5th annual NASA Project Management Conference. That ought to be a cluster F. What else is happening? You know, the names of these are great. This one might be interesting. The 9th International Symposium on Artificial Intelligence, Robotics, and Automation in Space. That's in Universal City, the 26th through the 29th, pretty much the whole week. There are the usual comets and asteroids zipping by the planet and around the sun. We have a lecture on the 28th called Where in the World Will Our Energy Come From? That's in Pasadena, California. And the Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite workshop will begin on the 29th in Moffett Field, California. Okay? All right, one last thing tomorrow night. If you decide to go out and take a look around, if it's clear, you'll see Venus pass Mercury. You'll be able to see the two planets in the morning sky south to the east horizon, actually east-southeast probably. Venus and Mercury very close in the morning tomorrow, 1.2 degrees apart or so. And you'll find Mercury, up and to the left of Venus. Okay? And if you look another 26 degrees or so up and to the right, you'll see Jupiter. And you'll have to do this just before sunrise in the morning, okay? Okay, Let's see. I think we will play another piece of music here and then come back and talk a little bit about some people that are in the news, at least in my news, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. I'm gonna be playing some music from a number of different bands tonight. We heard Finn O'Loughlin to get the show going with that great cover of War Pigs. And then I played a song from this band Shelter Belt that I like. And now I'm going to play a song from a band called The Ruse. And all of these bands we'll probably hear a little bit more from sometime later in the year, but I just wanted to sort of mix up some new stuff and do it tonight. So this is The Ruse. You're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And my name is Mike Hagen, and the song is called Swallow You. Back in just a few minutes, and we'll do it up some more.
I'm up. I keep waking up in the dark. Just trying to stare down time. It's tough when you're left alone with your heart. It's the only constant sound all night. Or distant sound all night.
All right, Swallow You. That's a band called The Ruse. Excellent stuff, and like I say, more from them coming up, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Mid-Missouri Source for a whole bunch of good radio. And it is about 22 minutes before the midnight hour on the 25th of February, 2008. A couple notes of note. There was a man who was known in our culture as Geronimo, and it was the anniversary of his passing on the 17th of February last week. Because John was here, I didn't talk about a couple of people that I normally would have, and I did not want my grandfather to go forgotten. So, Geronimo was born in 1829 in what is today western New Mexico. Back then it was still Mexican territory. Actually, it was not Mexican territory. It was, you know, Geronimo's territory, Apache territory. He was a Bedonkohe Apache and an amazing warrior and a leader. He was probably one of the most recognized names out of, you know, America's past, certainly out of the Indian past. A little bit lesser known is his true name, which is called Goyatle. And Goyatle is a word that literally meant one who yawns in his own people's tongue. But he was an amazing man and one of our ancestors and one of my grandfathers, and was reportedly given the name Geronimo by Mexican soldiers. And there's a lot of disagreement as to why they call him that, but he was certainly singled out by the Mexican army because he performed these amazing feats in battle and was attributed with supernatural powers, and you know, including the ability to be invulnerable to bullets and this sort of thing, which interestingly is the same type of story that's told of Tasuka Witko, of Crazy Horse, and you know, that these men were protected by the ancestral spirits in the midst of battle. But at any rate, Geronimo, Dejila Ita Milala, February 17th, 1909, passed on to the ancestors. John Marco Allegro, on the 17th of February, he was born in 1923, and on the same day he died in 1988. So happy birthday and happy death day to John Marco Allegro. Of course, he was the maverick of the Dead Sea Scrolls. He was a really free-thinking, amazing scholar who challenged orthodox views on the Dead Sea Scrolls and eventually the Bible and the entire history of religion. The book that most of my listeners are familiar with is The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, which pretty much put him on a cross and ended his career. But it's an amazing book, along with things like the Dead Sea Scrolls that he wrote in 1956, The Treasure of the Copper Scroll in 1960, and he wrote, I think, a book, I don't quote me on the title, but I think it was The Dead Sea Scrolls and the Christian Myth, which is quite an amazing piece of literature. So anyway, John Marco Allegro, he was an amazing linguist and a student of world religion. And in 1953, he was invited to become the first British representative on the international team working on the recently discovered Dead Sea Scrolls in Jordan. And his story is a remarkable one. He has a daughter whose name is Judith Ann Brown, and Judith has actually been on the program. I interviewed her a year ago, a year and a half ago. It's sort of a difficult interview to listen to because the audio is not great, and she has a rather heavy British accent. But if you're willing to, you know, concentrate, it's well worth the listen. She wrote the book, of course, John Marco Allegro, The Maverick of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it's an amazing story about her father and life with just an amazing, amazing man. Okay. All right, one last person of note who would be having a birthday today, as a matter of fact, Rudolf Steiner, the founder of Anthroposophy, also the creator of the Waldorf system of education. He was a significant member in the occult history of Europe in the 19th century, and was involved in all kinds of interesting and strange stuff. So there you have it. Rudolf Steiner, Gianmarco Allegro, and Geronimo Goyatle. Here's to all you, my friends, and thanks for everything that you gave to us and taught us and left behind for us to share with other people, okay? All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I'm going to take one more quick break here, play a piece of music, and then we'll come back with Richard Allen Miller. We'll get going with Richard a little bit early, before the top of the hour, I think. I'm a little bit ahead of myself tonight, and Richard always has plenty of things to say, so I think we'll take advantage of that, okay? All right, in the meantime, we are going to hear a piece of music here by a band called Percival, and this song is called Move On. It's Mike, you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. song called Move On from Percival. It's Mike, you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Richard Allen Miller in just a minute here. There's one more thing that I wanted to mention because I got an email and I promised I would answer, but I wanted to do it on the air. Somebody was sharp and they caught the fact that David Walker, the Comptroller General, the guy who runs the General Accounting Office of the United States of America, well, he retired and is leaving the office of Comptroller General of the GAO. Now, the reason he's important, at least as far as I'm concerned, is because he's been one of the people who's been on my list as far as people who I'm looking to get a response from on the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program. Now, he's also important because he's the main reason why the feds in Minnesota won't let me talk to the former Ohio Congressman James Traficant. For those unaware, Traficant informed Walker of the existence of the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program in July of 2001, and he requested an official investigation. Next thing he knows, he's in a federal pen. Anyway, that's two people that have been on the list that I've been really pounding, David Walker and Matt Blunt, of course, who retires and, you know, stunned his Republican peers here in Missouri and sent the Missouri GOP reeling, and we'll see how they handle that. But that was certainly a surprise to the party. At any rate, the U.S. Special Virus Cancer Program, making some waves, perhaps. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, it is Mike Hagan, and we will be back with Richard Allen Miller in just a sec.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, it is Mike, and you are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. My guest is Richard Allen Miller. You all love him so much, I'm not going to give him much of an introduction. He's been on the program a number of times, and I'm sure he'll be on the program a number of times in the future. But tonight, we're going to talk about magic and alchemy. And as we do that, we will say hello to Richard Allen Miller. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming back on the program.
You're welcome. I've always enjoyed working with you.
I feel the same way. Okay, look, magic and alchemy. I got all kinds of questions, but I want to start with you. Why should people think that you're someone who might know a thing or two about magic? A little bit about your background.
Yeah. Magic, as I would define it, is it's an art form. Like sculpting or dancing, observe it in the physical plane as legerdemain, sleight of hand, but magic is the art of changing consciousness at will. And what I'm going to suggest is that there are a number of different, unique, altered states of consciousness that are quite different from each other, and that in each of these states, we're able to do something that we're not able to do in a conscious waking state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My work with Navy SEALs showed that there was a small area of width of hypnosis, biological. I mean, you know, it had markers so that you could measure the depth of the hypnosis, which is a number of different, you know, parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And in that state, you could improve the ability in guessing in an individual by like 400 times. That means you come to a fork in the road and the warrior, the soldier, the SEAL, was able to, with a 99.9975% probability, pick the right path.
Wow.
And at ESP. You know, the ability to gain knowledge outside normal realms of, you know, information.
Mm-hmm.
And being, you know, having to, you've got to flip the coin, you've got to make a decision which way do you go and be right.
Right.
Okay, we found that that state of consciousness was a very light state of hypnosis. It's right there. And that in either side of it a little bit, it varied a little bit. But if you honed it right into that area right there, your ability in guessing was increased like 400 times over natural, normal occurrence, you know, where you'd make a guess, you know, and, is it green, is it red?
And that was a state that these guys could put themselves in at will.
Anybody can.
Uh-huh.
And that's what my latest book coming out with Earth Pulse Press will be on the work I did with Navy SEALs on that. It's how to relate certain specific states of hypnosis with the ability to improve your ability in guessing.
Wow.
You want to go to Reno or
right,
or,
right.
or have a girlfriend and be able to make decisions, you know, right decisions. When we're and you don't do that in a conscious state, and that is the purpose of these altered states. And I'm going to further suggest that all these different states are areas where you can do things you cannot do in conscious state, and the ability to move from one state of consciousness to another is the practice of magic.
Mm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what they call path working.
Okay, all right. Let's talk a little bit about historical stuff. Go back as far as you like, but I'm interested in sort of the old, certainly European history of magic. I know it certainly was something that was being practiced, but only by maybe a certain elite.
Yeah, magic was always seen as a higher form of physics.
Mm.
And so it was reserved for the ultra elite of Europe for centuries. It was all your greatest poets, writers, philosophers. They were all part of magical orders of some kind. Most were dilettante. Some were very serious. And, you know, like William and Westcott, where they did translations of important works throughout history, the Sefer Sephira or the Book of Splendor or, you know, the original Bibles. Sometimes it was the voice of the silence from the Upanishads. These are all things that people like Blavatsky, others did translations of that are essential in our current understandings of the more mystical element of reality. the side view, the sidebars of... it was always suggested that in order to have control of the physical world, which, by the way, is an illusion, that one had to have a broader worldview, meta, meaning a broader or beyond.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so metaphysics, of course, was beyond physics.
Yeah.
And magic became the rigor or discipline that will eventually merge out of the new forms of physics, which basically is adding a mystery school to our current forms of technology. Something that the Hopi and or the Aborigines enjoy in their way of being that we've lost in our current society. And what I would hope to do as a scientist is to suggest that there's a possibilities of other ways of envisioning what's going on.
Yeah.
And that having a more mystical or magical sense not only enriches but allows the possibilities that wouldn't be otherwise. You know, it's a person's worldview and belief system that sets up the limitations of what that world can become.
Right. We all create our own prisons, sort of.
That's right. That's why this book I'm writing that will be out this next month is of three books that Nick Begich is publishing on the non-local mind in a holographic universe. If you choose to model the universe as a hologram where as above, so below, there are like levels of the same thing, then you have the concept of the mind's eye and the importance of what imagination is and what it really is about and what the whole nature of the inner space that we call altered states of consciousness, the ability to move from one to the other, to seamlessly move from one to the other in an art form that creates a reality.
Thus magic.
Yes. With a K.
Right.
You know, for Medford, Ashland, Grants Pass, Illinois Valley, Goose Bay, and Klamath Falls. Just kidding.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that.
That was an anagram. That was just playing with words.
Yes, but what was the reference?
We started a thing back here when we were still bulletin boards, which was called Magic Net.
Who's we?
Oh, Harold Miller and a couple of other crazy people here in the area. They set up one of the first bulletin boards, and it was called Magic Net. It was an outlaw one, and if you do any historicals, you'll see that there were some hackers in there and some bad boys, but it was Magic Net, magick.net.
Mm-hmm.
And then during that period, that was my handle. I was Dr. Ram, you know, like Dr. Strange, master at Magic Net. And we were setting up bulletin boards all around. You know, there was the one down in Berkeley, but the big one was PC Link, which later became AOL.
Yeah, that's right. You sent me some of that stuff. Amazing.
Yeah, way back when.
Incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what about the inheritance that came from old Europe? In other words, how you mentioned that there were some people that wrote important books that were able to do. I heard some like angelic references in the things that you said.
Oh, yeah. You're speaking of like the various, throughout history, there were grimoires.
Yeah, and how does this get passed on? I mean, how do we have what we have?
Well, there's a lot of different philosophies on that. My teacher, Randy Couch, out of Seattle.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him. Yeah.
Randy?
Randy Couch.
Yeah.
Okay.
1969, taught a course at the University of Washington on grimoires. And, of course, I had to take that course.
And what's a grimoire?
A grimoire is a book on magic. That's what a grimoire is. It's a book of magic. You know, like the Malthusian Macquarium, you know, by A.E. Waite. Some of these different books, there's Grimoire of Honorius or Grimoire of Armadel.
Huh.
There's all throughout history, there are all these different books. But what's really interesting is that there's really only one book of magic that was ever written, and then throughout history, it was translated into interpretations. And that was The Greater and Lesser Keys of Solomon. And that was, today we know it as two books, is The Greater Keys of Solomon, and the Lesser Keys are known as the Gewishah, or the Lamegaton, the 72 fallen angels. So one was invocation, where you were invoking angels, and the other was that you were evoking demons, or lesser elementals. And it was a way of moving from one level of consciousness, which would be, you know, your subconscious, more primitive, undines and earth spirits. And gosh, you know, the Spiderwick Chronicles were really a very cool movie, by the way. I just have to tell you that.
What was it called?
The Spiderwick Chronicles.
Oh, the Spiderwick Chronicles, yeah.
Which is out right now. Is a very, very cool kind of concept of that universe or worlds of Findhorn, you know, of elementals, of lesser entities than man, and then, of course, greater entities than man, you know, angels, angelics, whatever. The books of magic have always referred to this, and in my years of being a psychonaut, is that the right word?
That's a pretty good one, yeah.
Psychonaut.
Yeah.
I have walked on worlds that are as real as Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of which, in my meditations, I go to a mythical place called Sach Khan, which is actually in some ways more real than Earth. You do this through a thing called the sound current, where you hear a sound in your right ear. This has to do with the original books of the Upanishads, and the voice of the silence. There are 10 sounds that were orchestrated, and that tells you what sound you hear, tells you at what level of spiritual development you're at. However, actually, it is a way of navigating to the various states of consciousness. And that's discussed by John Curtis Gowan in books like The Development of the Psychedelic Individual,
mm-hmm.
and his monumental trance art and creativity book, which I used for maybe 7 years, is a primary text in teaching shamanism. It's in my second book under Power Tools, I have as the eighth level, I list the ontology of mystical states so you can relate one place or one thing to another. It is extremely important that you have a map or a Anjin-san, yeah, there he is with his map, knowing where he's going when he goes internal.
Right.
Like going into space, there are unique reference points. They talk about them in the Bordeaux et al. And the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Even other books of the dead, like the Papyrus of Ani and some of the others.
The Egyptian stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they'll all talk about these various places of consciousness. And this is the principal concept that I stem off of with my physics and my studies in physics.
Okay. Yeah, because you're a physicist who intends with the aim of magic, I think.
Well,
you call yourself.
You mean the goal of spirituality or the aim of religion, whatever. Yeah. It's got all the words, but really it's about intentionality. And the idea that the Greeks had it pretty good. They listed love in four words. There was eros, philo, agape, and thelema, or thelema. And thelema was the highest form of love that there was. It had to do with the love of will, your purpose, your calling, your character and your calling. That's James Hillman.
That's incredible. That for those unaware, you know, I think we should mention it. The whole phrase. What is it?
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Love is the law.
Love under will.
Yeah. Incredible.
Right.
What a series of words. In other words, this is a great transition because
some of that may have come from Rabelais. You know, Crowley didn't make up everything.
Crowley. You're talking about Aleister Crowley?
Yes, Aleister Crowley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was what gave magic a bad rap because of his intentionality with the uses of drugs, which at that time was an extremely powerful tool for going from, like taking LSD, going from a reality state to a mystical state where you actually got it, that you could see how your thoughts changed the reality. And you did that by watching it from another perspective or another state of consciousness.
Right, right. So Crowley was important in the beginning of the OTO and the...
Well, the OTO, of course, existed way before Crowley did. It was Theodore Roos and those people in Germany.
What was the OTO for people who aren't familiar?
Ordo Templi Orientis, the Order of the Temple of the Orient. It had to do with sex magic. There are, in the non-local mind, the ability to cause a physical change in the physical environment requires an act of drama beyond normal scope. That means, you know, voodoo does it by slicing the neck of a chicken and blood squirts everywhere and everything goes red and primitive. Or you could do it through forms of tantric yoga where you had the orgasm as a place of breaking through from that spiritual place, the place between psyche and matter, where you made it into the physical plane.
What's the significance? Certainly there's a tremendous amount of energy released at...
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's why the so-called Masonic secret, you know, all these secrets, was the thought that occurred at the moment of climax happens. And so if you're having sex with your partner and you start thinking of another woman, what do you think is going to happen? Well, that's what you're creating. You're creating those thought forms. That's what we're talking about is, and the repetition of it and the the ritualization of it will start to form a shape to it. Crowley's book, Magical Child, it was a novel that he wrote, was about how World War II. It was a sex magic ritual that was, the child that was being created was World War II.
Really? And you believe that he had part in bringing that on?
No. That he wrote that as a science fiction representation of how Simon Moon and the people in that book would do a sex magic ritual.
I see.
And
I see.
How it might manifest as a literal reality. One of which is, I wrote a screenplay with my ex-wife Iona once called The Magical Child. And it starts in the Temple of Ishtar in 2257 B.C. with sex magic ritual and goes right up to 1947. Same participants doing the ritual to create a savior god for the end of man so that the gods wouldn't die. The end of man has to do with the Van Allen belt collapsing, and, you know, a child is created in a book called Ion, A-I-O-N, from Carl Jung, and we find out later that it's not, it's a homo lumen. Dr. Charlotte Bach at the Warburg did a doctoral thesis under several of us.
In Germany?
Yes, and her title was called Homo Mutant, Homo Lumen, where she, that was her doctoral thesis, where she discusses the next evolutionary stage of man as a light body, where we wrote a books called The Diamond Body, having to do with geometric places of consciousness. You know, it goes on a lot of levels, just like The Matrix does. There's many, many, many layers of understanding what's going on. And magic has been the one I've seen it work. I remember one of the projects they had me do. I've said this story before, but it's a good story because it's representative of where I'm trying to go with the concept of magic.
All right.
The Hopi, the Navy sent me in to study these two Hopi medicine men that could change the weather, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And as they were making the sand painting and mumblings and things, I was watching the environment change, like in a science fiction movie where the clouds are rolling in out of nowhere and it's like the weather's starting to come. This one Hopi looked up at me, looked down at the sand painting, looked back up at me, winked at me, and ran his hand through the sand painting, breaking it. And what happened was that the weather went back to normal. And he started to smile. And that's when I realized that the sand painting looked an awful lot like a solid-state physics device. It was like, a complex electronic device like we use in our own computers.
You know, I was also going to mention the similarity and the certain, some sort of connection between the sand paintings of the Hopi and the Indian mandala sand paintings that they do on the other side of the planet.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yes, the mandalas. Yes, Arguella. Yeah, there you go. Right, we're on the same page.
Yeah, okay.
And the fact is, that's what 19th century magic was about. It was talismanic magic, geometry. And 20th century magic was on drugs. And 21st century magic is now moving to the concepts of sound and light using cymatics and frequency bands or resonances. It's interesting to watch the change of subtle thought forms of getting it in one's mind's eye of how it all works. And that place is where it happens, because Gowan said that it wasn't dimethyltryptamine that was the important drug which gave us a sense of aliens and God and things above man, but the lysergic acid amides that were the ones that connected the dot that gave what Crowley called aha, that ability of connecting one point to another and seeing how it works, because when you do that, that's where it happens. It isn't about the physics.
Amazing. All right, tell me a little bit more about Randy Couch. He was one of your teachers, so I think he probably
Randy
is an interesting guy.
Randy's still alive. He's apparently in good health. A friend of mine sent me a YouTube clip that I sent to you.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, he's a nut. Yeah, Randy is like an idiot savant that is brilliant beyond anything. I have always appreciated Randy as a teacher for me, and always appreciated that I got something special from Randy. What? I'm not quite sure. Might have been crabs, but mostly, no. Randy, shoot, back 1970, when I'm doing Navy, what Randy was doing was filming muggings in Seattle with infrared cameras. He was a crazy person, man. I've never seen anything like it. It was wonderful. And to have these kinds of friends that kind of made Seattle what it is, not a monster city that it is, is kind of interesting to go back historically and see how that all happened. Randy was interesting. He was there with a bookstore called Puss and Books, which was before my Beltane. Puss and Books was the metaphysical bookstore, even over Dorothy B. Hughes or some of the other big ones in Seattle until Beltane came in. When Beltane happened, everything changed, of course. Then everybody got interested, and that was when it all started to flower. What is 1974, 1975? Yeah, it was. There's on my website under the vault, there's some old pictures of the early days at Beltane. It was a very cool place.
And Beltane was your publishing company or your
bookstore? No, it was a bookstore. It was a huge bookstore that sold Lehigh's and did all kinds of other things down on University Avenue in Utah. Yeah. It was just a place to hang out. And the reason I did it was because I had access to all the books. You know, there was a publishing house. I'm trying to think of the name of it now. It's they did everything in spiral Xeroxes. It was what they did is things you couldn't get from Bulwer Lytton or Nikola Tesla. Anything you could imagine, they had a rare copy of it, and then they just Xeroxed it. You know, and so I sold a lot of really strange books out of book.
Right.
We had everything there, though, because I carried everything from Iqbal Ali Shah to Audrey Shaw, his son. And Iqbal Ali Shaw wrote a book called Western Occultism that is a classic, and it was Audrey Shaw that later wrote on, you know, the Eastern forms of Buddhism and so on.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, now, this is a little bit of a side note, but not much. You've mentioned the Navy a couple times. Well, what's the Navy got all this interest in all this occult stuff?
That's
going to surprise
Navy,
a lot of people.
The Navy is your New World Order. You know, they're the marching arm for the DuPonts. The Navy is where all the technology is dealt with. And that is any advancements in weapons, technology, it's Navy. It's not Army or CIA or any of that, man, NSA. Mm-hmm. It's Navy. Mm-hmm. And it always has been. And I worked for Navy when I first came out of grad school, with what we call SEAL Corporation, before it was even Navy SEALs. My handler, Ted Kruger, is now working at, I think he's Louisiana, virtual architecture. You know, we're still around, some of us. It's interesting because there was a lot of questions. Is this stuff real? Is this bullshit or is this real? Is that medicine man really changing the weather with that sandpaper?
Is
that really happening?
Mm-hmm.
And what they had were people like me that would don't go in and study it and try to figure it out. See, mostly it was bullshit. But once in a while, I would run across something that I have no idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. I saw a red feather shaman firewalking up in Mount Vernon area.
Mm-hmm.
And we at that time, we were doing a lot of biofeedback for Menninger Foundation and so on.
Right.
And so we had all this equipment. We wired this one guy up, and we found that he could walk on these coals without any damage to his feet. How does that work? Well, apparently he was gating the heat to a part in his back, central part of his back, where he was radiating the heat there like a microtubule form of superconductivity. It was very, very strange.
Yeah, yeah.
But we observed things. Mostly we popped a lot of myths, you know, Secret Life of Plants, that kind of stuff. We would bust Baxter and those kinds of people. But and Nick Begich did 8 hours of interviews with me on the different things I did with Navy.
Uh-huh.
You know, we'd take one project at a time, we'd just run it down, what we did. And that apparently has attracted a lot of interest because the stuff we did was not so much, we knew about aliens and things like that, but we were more worried about what the Russians were doing back then. I mean, that's how I remember it. And, you know, they brought in top scientists, or they would fly us into Lithuania and Prague to meet some of these people. I had Dr. Milan Riesel in my home for 3 days.
Who's he?
He's a Czech scientist that did all the ESP studies that I finally started to confirm for Navy that was real. There was other groups. Yanif was doing stuff with, cosmobiology. It wasn't so much the astrology of personality or Horae, but, which was, by the way, verified. We did a bunch of stuff for earthquake hazards with planet Uranus. How did that work? You know, I mean,
when you get hit by Uranus?
Well, no, when the planet Uranus and the Earth and the Sun are in a certain geometric alignment, there is a 3 sigma error coefficient. That means there's a 99.99975% probability of a major earthquake on Earth. How does that work? Hmm. Well, that's where I first started to realize that space isn't real and that that storm on Jupiter represents something going on in my stomach. There's metaphor, as above, so below. And our limited way of looking at what we call reality is so skewed and so fraught with error that's why Castaneda wrote, the tonal is everything that is known, tonal, is illusion, and that the nagual, reality, is that which cannot be known by definition, like God. Mm-hmm. It's beyond knowledge because it doesn't work like that. And that's what's wrong with physics, is that the world, the universe, doesn't work in terms of laws. It works in terms of imagination. And that imagination can change the laws. Altered states.
Amazing. All right, look, I think it's a good place to take a little break, okay?
You bet.
All right, we'll come back and talk some more with Richard Allen Miller. Hey, Rich, let's give out the websites before we go to break.
Sure. Did you want me to do that?
Yeah, you can if you want, or I'll give
them. Okay, well, I have a new portal called richardallenmiller.com.
Right.
ALAN.
Yep, richardallenmiller.com.
My primary website is nwbotanicals.org for Northwest Botanicals, plural, with that creature under the bridge, the org.
Right.
And then I have two new sites called dogcancer.ca out of Canada.
All right.
And I represent alohamedicinals.ca.
All right.
We have specials going on, so, you know, shopping carts and things like that on our health items. You know, we're doing mushrooms, pharmaceutical mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Still and, the cordyceps.
Right. Hybrid. And Nick Begich has been doing some nanotronic nutrient products on my recommendation. I've written part of a book I'm writing for him, talks about these pharmaceutical mushrooms and how they can be used for the evolution of consciousness.
Awesome.
There's,
all right.
You know,
Yeah. That's cool. Hey, by the way, just as a quick note before we go to break, I finally found a guy who knows a whole lot about nanoparticular silver, and he also knows a lot about mushrooms and this sort of thing. So I'm going to talk with him in a couple weeks because I'm still sort of moving forward on that
yeah,
other project.
Who is so. That?
His name is Gordon Pedersen, and he's the science officer for a company called American Biotech Labs.
Oh, I know what American Biotech. Yeah, they buy some of their products from us.
Yeah, they make a pretty interesting product. So
yeah.
Anyway, interesting stuff going on. All right, we'll be back in just a few, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody, Richard Allen Miller will repeat those websites for you a couple more times throughout the program tonight, okay? All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We are going to hear a piece of music here from a band that is called D Numbers, and this is called Colossifliction. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Great stuff there. That's D Numbers. We'll hear more from those guys in the next few weeks. I'll pick a show and we'll feature that whole CD. That's great stuff. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just about 12:30 now on the 26th now of February. Almost to Leap Day. Too bad we use such a silly calendar. We wouldn't have to go through this every 4 years. Anyway, we'll have Richard Allen Miller back with us in just a moment. I want to say a quick thank you to the listeners who donated and pledged money to support the radio station over the recent pledge drive, which ended a few days ago. Anyway, we did pretty well, and I appreciate all of you who support the show and the radio station. Also, I want to say thanks to a couple people here at the radio station who just did an amazing job when we were real short-handed. Corey Flaker did an awesome job, and Meg Poach, and Tony Lason. Man, Tony Lason just did an amazing job. Was here, seemed like he was here the whole pledge drive. And, of course, the people in the office working hard as always. So, anyway, the station rumbles on, and thanks to all you who help us do so, okay? Okay, once again, Mike Hagan, you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and we're with Richard Allen Miller, live from his place in Oregon, up in the Pacific Northwest, and we're talking about magic and the occult and alchemy. And, Richard, I've got a question with regard to language.
Sure.
My studies or some of the work that I've read with regard to magic gave me the idea that magicians over time sort of agreed about one thing, that that it was all about words, and if you could get the words right, well then you could get your
that's one, whatever. Yeah, that's the level of the hologram, which we call sonics, or the concept of voice. It all starts with sound.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, tell me the difference, or explain a little bit. In other words, there's a difference between thoughts and spoken words, because spoken word actually perturbs the environment. So
it sets up a resonance.
Well, would you talk a little bit about the differences? Because apparently you can do magic in through thought form, but also through verbal language. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
It's all the same. That's what Hebrew was originally about. The gematria, or the numerology, or the sephira part of language, was that when you said something, it had far more implication or less redundancy than we currently enjoy with things like English.
Hmm.
Hebrew was a more concentrated language with its mother letters and relationships of one word to another in the way they could relate it through numbers. And that was all vibratory. And they set up a whole system around the Bible, the Sefer Sephira, that was based on the nature of sound and one relating one word or groups of letters and the way they would be pronounced and cause a ripple in the universe.
Amazing.
They call that cymatics, you know, the ability to go, and then watch over still water an interference pattern.
A wave appear.
Right, that you would call a mandala. That's where mandalas came from, was the effect of sound on water.
Incredible, really?
Yeah, that's where they all came from. And originally, now we're trying to relate them to crop circles.
Right, and sand.
But the idea in Star Trek, I was watching Star Trek before we did this, Star Trek Enterprise. I love sci-fi.
I do too.
Yeah. So they, you know, Bones, remember he has
this
little
my favorite, DeForest Kelly.
Yeah, the tweedle, 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 and he's manipulating your heart externally by using sound. And they're doing that now in England. It's actually approved in medicine and everything. It's called cymatics, and we know such things as Mozart effect. We know things like what Pythagoras. Pythagoras was the one that originally came up with the seven chords in the octave.
Yeah, for the scale of music.
Fibonacci, that whole concept.
Oh, yeah.
Of the way you would group your memes. We do the same thing in our thought forms. We have eight basic ways we group information, starting with your physical plane, and then you got your emotional, and then your intellectual, and your archetypal. Well, there are eight different ways. Is that an emotional thing, or is that an intellectual thing? Is that a physical thing? And you're able to somehow know, yeah, that's green, it's not blue. And you know where that undefined line is because of the way your senses work and the way your mind wraps around those senses in terms of organizing memory.
Mm-hmm.
And those are called memes, or, the way of grouping a situation or metaphor. That's what it really is about. It's a way of quantizing a holographic universe, like fractals. For example, a fractal started a certain geometric size. The next one up has got a unique size effect as the Mendelbot generator or Julia or May pattern that would create that fractal is one size above. It's not infinite sizes above. It's one size next up, and mm-hmm. It appears to be quantized. That's why we started first with a quantum universe, because we recognized how we were grouping certain kinds of things. Is that a wave, or is that a particle? Is that a blah, 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 or is that a blah, blah, blah? And when we couldn't make those distinctions because it was both, that's when Gabor first postulated the concept, got a Nobel Prize for it, 1947, on the concept of hologram. Where you're basically taking n dimensions of information and compressing it down into n minus one dimensions.
Yeah.
It was like a shorthand.
Uh-huh.
And going from one level of the hologram to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, holograms would be seen as information and resolution of the information, the actual level of resolution in terms of you're chunking it down. And sound is one of the, basic frequencies. You know, it's like in the brain waves and things of that nature, heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with sound. And I start with sound, and then we move up into higher frequencies, which would be light and, that kind of thing. Audio is lower frequencies.
All right. When a person has a thought, then, the difference between the thought and what it does in the world in a physical way versus if the person spoke the same words.
Yeah, power of the word. that's a nice poetic thing. Yeah, always the power of the word. Yes, it is about mantra. It is about resonance of the chanting. It is. That's how I, for example, balance myself every morning. One of the first things I do is I go through what's called middle pillar, where I do several different chants, because basically what they do is they activate certain parts of my body just by doing the sound. A cat does it with purring. We've seen it numerous times when you're hurt, how you'll hum certain ways that makes your digestion work better, things of that nature. There is a relationship.
Okay. All right. Amazing. All right. But then again, the power of concentrated thought can do amazing things.
Well, that's the idea of my book, showing how the intensity of the act, the focus, the determination, the repetitiveness.
Repetitiveness seems to be an important part of this.
Well, it's adding to the building blocks. It's like instead of one big brick, I put in a whole bunch of little bricks toward the same wall.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the wall that I'm building. And each time I think about wanting to go to Hawaii, the best way to do going to Hawaii is to wear a sweatshirt that says Hawaii on it. That's what I found.
<That's>
Well, that works.
No wonder
I want to go to Amsterdam.
No wonder I've never been there.
A sweatshirt that says Amsterdam on it. It seems to work.
Mine, the only ones I have say, like, Pittsburgh, you know?
Oh, no. Logging and mining.
Well, I'm going to make a trip out there to the Pacific Northwest sometime in the next few months, hopefully, so.
Don't be on hope.
Oh.
Hope was the last evil in Pandora's box.
All right, I should
got to be more active, like I am coming out. Make sure that you come out either in July or August when I work at the Brit.
At the Brit, and we'll watch some music, yeah.
Yeah, because they have the best.
Yeah, that's a great gig.
And it's out in the woods, which means there's no big crowds. It's like probably the finest way to do a concert with ZZ Top or something is out in the woods.
All right. Okay, back to magic. We haven't spoken about alchemy yet, but maybe you could mix and match those. Are they the same thing?
No. Alchemy is an offshoot of magic, as chemistry is a lesser form of physics.
But wouldn't a true alchemist be considered a magician?
No.
No.
An alchemist is an alchemist. A magician is also an alchemist, just like a physicist is also a mathematician.
I see. Okay.
In other words, the alchemy part is one of the tools a magician uses of a number of tools that he has, like a physicist will use mathematics.
Okay. All right.
It's a tool. It's a way of manipulating certain things. Now, certainly, there are processes that are more efficient than others, and that was the purpose of alchemy, was to discover, you know, the more efficient ways of being a vessel and changing the vessel or changing it into this or into that. Base metals into gold as a metaphor. And as that analog would translate in the hologram, that's what a magician would do. But a magician is first and foremost a magician in the way he thinks, not an alchemist.
Mm.
And just like a physicist is a physicist, not a mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to get that distinction.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so a magician, you said, is a magician in his thoughts.
Well, a magician, here's a good one. A magician is only as strong as his word.
Mm. Tell the truth.
That means how strong are you with your word?
Yeah.
That would determine what level of magician you are.
Uh-huh.
If you could bank on it like you could, James Bond. James Bond's going to come through. I mean, that's like the level of magician, the level of the word.
Mm.
And again, it comes back to audio, verbal, the word. That's what we always use. So a magician is only as strong as his word. And that has a lot of different possible implications. That's what a magician is able to do. He's able to speak on a number of levels at the same time. And alchemy is a process by which he does that.
Mm.
Magic is too, actually, to be precise. It's an art form. It's like, you know, someone going into welding and making statues, and they have something that's very unusual. That's what a magician is, that kind of a person where they can change the reality around you, the way you see things.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, you make me think about, if a magician is using words and he is no more powerful than his word, what about these sort of black magicians that manipulate and misrepresent words and lie, essentially?
Intentionality is the root of the strength of the thought form. What is your intent?
Mm-hmm.
And to make judgment on black or white, actually, I really like the way Isaac Bonwitz did it in his book, Real Magic, where he called it living color. Rather than it being black or white,
yeah.
It was living color. It's as a magician, I would not choose to make a judgment on another person's path or values. However, if they deter me from my own are where I go for. Now, Lieber Oz, O-Z, comes in, is when someone thwarts your true will, like they try to affect and change and cause you not to do your true will.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, by Hobbes or Kant, natural law rights of killing that person.
Mm.
That's magic is very, very clear about the lines of territory. There's no gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And to make judgment on another person's act is not the purpose of a magician, or at least not mine. It's not my purpose. Mine is to try
to do your
what
will.
My calling is about.
To do your will. Do
yes,
what thou
that's
will.
Exactly right. I have a specific thing that I will to do, and it will happen, whether I like it or not, kicking or screaming type of thing. And the idea is to form a partnership or have knowledge and conversation. That's K&C. That's where you talk to your higher self like you envision it would be like talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
That's only halfway to God, and by the way, and that is the purpose and goal of high magic, is to have knowledge and conversation, to find a way of having dialogue with your higher self so that you walk through these altered states in a harmonious form of creating the reality that you choose.
Hmm. All right, let's talk about plants and magic.
Ah, chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First and foremost, we use the one that actually got the name, the magic mushroom.
Ah, soma.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a divine mushroom, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, which one? I mean,
Clark Heinrich has written a pretty good book on that.
But there's the Amanita, and then there's the psilocybe.
Well, historically, there's a lot of question as to what was soma, or life force, or juice. I'm going to suggest that the life force you see in me, the juice, the energy, the...
Mm-hmm. Which you have a tremendous amount of, by the way.
Well, I'm just part of that old neurologic circuit that Leary would say.
Yeah.
I'm 64, and yet, look at Albert Hoffman at 102.
Damn,
man.
I know.
The guy glows.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I mean, he's alive. Now, what do you think that is?
LSD? About 500 micrograms?
I'm going to suggest it's lysergic acid amide.
Ah,
that
close.
My body happens to be blessed, thank you, Lord, with a little more of that chemistry running around in my brain. So I'm able to not so much go outside the box, but see several boxes of possibilities. You know what I mean?
Right.
And connecting dots. That part is what I think is where my juice comes from. That's adenosine triphosphate, ATP.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where cold fusion occurs in the body, mm-hmm. is with ATP. That's the enzyme handshake that has to happen for any enzymic process to happen. You have to have a little tip of ATP to get it started, and you have a little tip at the other end. It stops the process, and that's your handshake. And that little sucker is like a torus,
mm-hmm.
a vortex,
mm-hmm.
that creates a plasma that pinches that down into cold fusion, what I'll call Brown's gas,
mm-hmm.
and is probably, which, by the way, you can eat. You can actually, in your diets, have power foods that will increase your ATP levels or your juice or your vital force or
mm-hmm.
that part of the, wow, he's really alive. You know, that place, that is... Part of what we seek in magic is that place of harmony with ourselves where we're in tune and healthy.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, that's one that I haven't been very good at lately. I've been sick as a dog all winter. So my magic hasn't been, my mojo has been lacking this winter, but I'm working on it.
Well, you need Nurse Cratchit or whatever. nurse Ratchet. That's
I need
right.
some sort of nurse, let me tell
yeah.
you.
Medic.
Probably about 5'6", blonde, blue eyes. Okay, let's see.
I think that Larry Clifford Norringer has has just the girl for you.
I imagine he's off there on the island enjoying himself.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. If a person wanted to begin a book collection and start learning about some of this stuff, maybe some good ones to add to their collection.
Okay, there's a couple of first books that everybody should read. First off, Colin Wilson has written one called The Occult. And, you know, he's got a chapter on Aleister Crowley. The chapter, I think, is called The Beast Himself. That's a great way to introduce Aleister Crowley. You know, a big 666 tattooed into his forehead just to cause trouble. Well, he was Victorian. He loved to offend as many people as he possibly could. He was probably like a Truman Capote at the time.
Oh, my God.
Real kind of moink like this. He probably talked like this and was really sarcastic. The way of doing it. And he was probably, And he was probably brilliant in his own ways. It's important to realize, however, that a teacher can only take you as far as that person themselves have been.
Sure.
So,
and your job is always to go
in Hastings.
And the job is always to try to go past the teacher, right?
Well, you want
to
you know, have the next level. Yeah. And that's why you need teachers, and you have look for spiritual beings, and but dialogue, knowledge and conversation is with your angel. That's the other 9/10 of your cerebral cortex. Finding a way to dialogue through diary and dreams, and gosh, I wonder why I had that dream, and wonder what that all really means. It isn't so much about what it means. It's more about how did you feel about that? That's because dreams work on a much lower level than your intellect. In some ways, they're very basic and are in a natural way of communicating with yourself. And once you can form the little nodules of, oh, that means I need to, blah, 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 once you start to form that kind of dialogue, it's amazing how synchronicity and all these other keywords that we use, serendipity, start to flower in your life on a moment-to-moment basis, like after a drug experience, and you're trying to assimilate that into your daily life. How do you do that where it becomes part of your daily life, and you're watching all these toads and fairies flying around, and you can see it. You can actually see them in a sense. They're very, very real. That's why I liked that movie, you know, what did I call it? The Something Chronicles,
the one you just mentioned, I forget.
Yeah, Chronicles. It's excellent movie because it is where Findorm came out. It is probably, that was the first book on parapsychology ever written, was R.D.L. Lang on the Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns, and Fairies. He presented it to the Royal Academy in 1896 as probably the first book in parapsychology, and that's what set up Findhorn and the nature of elementals, the concept that we now in our 21st century are starting to grok as an undying wood spirit.
Is magic returning to the masses?
Oh, yeah. That's why everybody that's listening to this program right now, sleep deeply, is, I'm just kidding. Just messing with it. But is why there is this thirst now. It cycles. I watched it occur in the early 70s when I started working Navy. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody was interested back then. We wanted to know what was bullshit and what could be actually developed in someone.
Right.
Well, we've come full circle. The problem is, I don't see man being allowed to evolve in medicine or in sciences until the prime directive has been met, and that's one half of the world's population is eliminated. That's what the New World Order is about. It's quite obvious that, and so I had this dream the other night where I saw health as a form of wealth in the by the year 2030. By the year 2030, it won't be about so much about money as it will be about barter. And a person's wealth, the elite, will be the ones that are healthy. And the reason they're healthy is because of their habits and their diets. And it will be a way of being, just like money is now. And this is another kind of vision that I see happening where there's going to be a return to rural ways of living, but it will be around neighborhoods and the way you work as a kibbutz, where you're dug in, you know,
right,
holding on to your civil
right.
rights. Good luck.
Right.
And, well, you know, I can't get a kidder. And I see this all happening as a magical way of being, of choosing to be more in tune with sustainability. I have a very, very good friend who just completed, he's got a brand new manuscript out called Organic Architecture. He was the protege of Frank Lloyd Wright. It's Joe White.
I love Frank Lloyd Wright, my God. I grew up in Illinois. I grew up as a kid going through all his old problems.
So Joe is 86, and he's got a bunch of books out. But his latest manuscript is called Organic Architecture. And what he did, he built Unicorn Farm, house, which is shaped like a unicorn, and it's a bunker with his roof is where his garden is. And it's on the Pack River up in Sandpoint, Idaho.
So, man, he should talk to Paul Laffley.
Hey, by the way, congratulations. I just got an email from Neil Goldsmith. He would love to be on your show.
Oh, good, good.
You know,
thank
Neil,
you.
Neil is one of the editors of Omni and does poetry science talks in New York City.
Well, the Omni magazine, when I was a kid, was what launched my imagination.
Well,
one of the things,
Neil
Goldsmith,
sure. Well, you mean Neil, man.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he wants to hook up with you, so that's good. I'm glad you picked that up because he just sent you email.
Yeah, I'm glad you forwarded that to me again because I missed it the first
time.
Well,
you got him, and he's prepared to go, and he will be something. He is the one that brought me back into the psychologies again since I've been in the herb trade for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I did the poetry science talks after Sisters, that big rave in Sisters, and went to New York. And that's what set me off with Nexus and where I am now.
Right, right.
But Neil Goldsmith. And he is a PhD, a medical doctor. He's a psychologist, a lawyer. Oh, yes, he's Jewish. Yes, I forgot. You'll love it, man. He's an LSD therapist.
Oh, my God. Good. We need more of them.
Well, he's like, he advertises in The New Yorker. His ad is the first ad in The New Yorker.
Awesome.
It's like he's very prestigious.
Right,
and
right.
So you'll
right.
enjoy his little dog and pony show.
All right. Well, let's see. We got about 5 minutes or so before we need to take another break. Anything you want to say before the break here?
Well, you know, magic is something that everybody will discover as unique for themselves. It's not like a set of rules. So the books I would recommend you start with, that's where we were going, was Dion Fortune, Psychic Self-Defense. You got to have a wall so to protect yourself if you're going to go into something. Because magic's a shortcut. It takes you out on the rim. And it's a fast lane to getting into consciousness.
Right.
It
there's also, a wild west out there, too. Yeah.
Well, there's danger. I mean, you've got the abyss, right?
Sure.
And
sure.
all of that. So you have to, you get crazy. And what you need to do is, so you start with Dion Fortune, Psychic Self-Defense. Colin Wilson will give you an overview of the way the world has gone in the occult, the occluded. And Crowley is worth reading. The other books I like, I really like the series Man, Myth, and Magic. I think that has perhaps been the single finest dictionary of collective pictures and thoughts of our current age, probably most profound.
All right.
Man, Myth, and Magic.
All right.
By Richard Cavendish.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you about another book. I have this old book called True and Faithful Relations, John Dee and...
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
Edward Kelly.
Uh-huh.
Could you talk a little bit about those guys?
Sure. The Action with Spirits. I had a first edition of one of those.
Damn.
One time I sold. Yeah, yeah. It was in French. And it is basically the first formations after the Book of Enoch, because that's where it came from, was the Book of Enoch.
Yeah, tell people about the Book of Enoch and why it was important.
Well, Raziel, the archangel, gave Enoch the names of all the fallen angels, all the 72. That's where the Lamegaton came from, the so-called Geuisha or Lesser Keys of Solomon. That if you had the demon's name, there were 72 fallen angels. If you had the demon's name, which is a geometric thing, you had control of the demon. That's why in all your movies like The Exorcist, they're trying to, what's your name? You know, tell me what your name is.
Right.
Because once you have the name, what is the name? A bunch of words. Sound, like you said. And isn't that interesting? And really, it is a container, like a glass is to water.
Huh, interesting, yeah.
That's what a name is. It containerizes the thought to a point where it's now useful as to do work.
Yeah, because you can sort of collapse that entire person into one word.
Well, if you can. That was the whole idea. But realize, of course, according to Carl Jung, you're either possessed or complexed. You either had one God working through you or had a couple of gods working through you. If you had one God, you were possessed. And if you had two or more gods, then, of course, you were complexed. No way out.
Yeah, now, again, a lot of people will say, well, what do you mean I've got gods or angels or things working through
me? Well, gods would be value systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like infinity would be a god, or incredible strength, or it would be those things you can't quite name that are beyond naming, like huge, strong, mighty, almighty, more than almighty, God almighty. Well, what does that mean? Mm. I mean, because in the old Bibles, they talked about a hierarchy of gods. There were there was, of course, you know, Yahweh, and then his boss, Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh. And then, of course, there were the veils of Isis, which were Ein Sof and Ein Sof Ur, which were above God or Kether.
Hmm.
And so the old Bibles used to refer to a hierarchy. And that always suited my taste because it was Bob Dylan that sang, you know, everybody's got to serve somebody.
Right, everyone's got a boss, yep.
There you go.
Wow. All right. So John Dee and Edward Kelly.
John Dee was part of the Elizabethan court where he could talk to angels. And the language that was used was called Enochian, which is kind of like Hebrew. I can give you some Enochian so you can hear the sound. Gaiza deva machazoda vilzodanozabalam el haraji mir babaloni abulosi simalimaji. Now that's Enochian, and those were what Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix sang about the watchtowers. There were the four watchtowers, or these angelic beings that surrounded man in the four corners: earth, air, fire, and water. You know, north, mm-hmm. south, east, mm-hmm. west. Gabriel, Raziel. You know, you had your in the east is Gabriel, in the west was okay, and you had these watchtowers, and the way you communicated was by using John Dee's book, Action with Spirits, because it had the calls, the Enochian calls. And some of the strangest words, you know, they're words, they're sounds that when said correctly, changed realities. Sound will do that. That's what music does to you. You know,
yeah,
it changes
sure.
your reality.
Sure. I mean, people, even on the most superficial scale, you know, and then just start tapping
it's
their foot when a good song
comes
out.
It's all the same. It's the same soup.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And all that's right. What you're doing with your show, with your music.
Magic. Yeah, we do magic and words and music,
yeah,
and we're
going to
take a break and play a little bit more music. How about that?
That sounds right.
All right, dude, hang in there, and we'll come back, and we get another hour, okay?
Cool.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is the wonderful Richard Allen Miller. You can find lots of information about Rick on the web at richardallenmiller.com. He has a number of other websites, dogcancer.ca, alohamedicinals.ca, and, of course, NW Botanicals, which is an amazing site in and of itself. So lots of stuff out there that Rick is involved in and doing, and take some time and take a look through some of those sites, okay? All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. And we're going to hear another song here by my friend Finn O'Loughlin. This guy's great. And we'll come back and talk to Rick Miller again after the top of the hour. Just about 1 a.m. now. So let me do the official FCC requirements. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Disappears my cage and the cynic.
Finn O'Loughlin. That's called Walk My Way. Great tune. Another one off of Spawn of the Beast. I love that CD. All right. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just a few minutes after 1 a.m. now on the 26th of February, 2008. Winter's still upon us, but spring coming up quick, hopefully. And we've got Richard Allen Miller on the line with us from his place in Oregon. And we'll get right back to him and say, hi, Rick. Hey, I've got a question with regard to something we were talking about earlier. Remember when you mentioned how the sound could affect the water and essentially make a mandala out there in the water?
Yeah, it does. Uh-huh.
Well, I've heard you talk about water, different forms of water.
And that's some stuff that's being done at MIT.
Well, then there's this guy Emoto, right?
And, yes, and he talked about how emotion somehow could trap. You can trap emotions and thought forms into water, you know, just by blessing it or praying over it.
All right. And then there's Victor Schauberger, who used to talk about dead water.
Schauberger was another one
water.
That did, yes, uh-huh.
Okay, so what do you make of this whole line of research?
Well, what we've discovered now is that there appears to be seven different forms of water, from activated water, you know, Willard water, to Kerry Reams, and what we call heavy water, which is used for bronze gas, and sonoluminescence, another form of water, which is formed by the dolphin. The dolphins blow these sonic bubbles that, just before they break the surface of the water, pop into light that's greater than what's inside the bubble.
It's amazing.
Kind of thing. It's their art form. Water seems to have basically seven different forms that we understand, like ice is quite different than water normal. Okay. It has a different kind of structure. It expands. It's one of the few elements that does what it does. Water is also two of the smallest elements that forms a molecule that has extremely interesting dimensional properties to it. You know, the dipole moment causes like a dimensional gate going here to
like
there.
Like flip-flops back and forth.
Well, there's this H709 with a free radical ion. That's another form of water. The MIT is doing a lot of study in this area right now, and they're now suggesting that the eighth form of water is basically an octave, and that how my whole non-local mind thing works is the way the different forms of water go through a microtubule and create electromagnetic waves into the physical reality, and that if you can work on that kind of a level in terms of your thought form projections, you can literally change psyche into matter.
Amazing. All right, so can we consciously, magically, technologically affect water in such a way that's good for us, beneficial to our
own
body?
It's already been shown that we do.
So
is it the mind causing the water to change?
Mm.
That's the big question.
Right.
Because if that were true, then it would mean that the whole concept of the non-local mind and magic is real.
Mm-hmm.
And so while this Emoto guy is a little off the wall in my level of approach to water and all of that, you know, that was the guy that was in that subway in Portland, you know, with all the artwork in that What the Bleep movie.
Yeah.
His stuff is kind of questionable. However, Schauberger, yeah, you talked about Schauberger now. His work out of Australia was very interesting. And that's where the whole concept of Dr. Brown came in with his bronze gas and the idea of cold fusion using heavy water. And, you know, a little more deuterium enriched. And with that, you can create a form of cold fusion, which is used now in welding and all kinds of different things. The Chinese fleet of ships, there's actually two fleets of ship in China that are using cold fusion as their primary power source now, rather than
conventional power.
Yeah, like power plants.
Or even a nuke.
Yeah, radioactive power plants. Yeah. There, Toshiba has now created a battery, which is a fission box that for your home that will last about 40 years. You use it like you would a battery. You plug it into your house, and it's a little cold fusion. Actually, it's not cold fusion. It's fission.
Mm-hmm.
Toshiba just came out with that.
Wow. Bring it on, you know.
No. That's going to be like bring on batteries. You know, what are you going to do with the waste of 40 years of all this crap.
Well, what we need is magic as for new alternative free energy for everybody.
You know where I first got a source of it was in the mission control, Apollo 14 mission studies, when Edgar Mitchell declared there's something outside this spacecraft. And it's on record.
Yeah.
And what it was a bushman from Australia that went up to visit him in the flame.
Really?
He built this big fire and the popping sparks that went up. He took his consciousness and went right up there. Mm-hmm. And apparently Edgar Mitchell could see him because he said so in Mission Control. It's a matter of record. And how does that work?
Mm.
That's what made me interested in studying the possibilities of altered states and what they really, truly mean, what consciousness is and what it is not.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a clue at this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, I think it has to do with water. I think it all comes back to the concepts of water and the way the water goes through your body. You know, if you put a negative ion generator up above your head at night, you don't have to go to the bathroom as often because the water is being in your body is going into the cell rather than your urine. And it's just a way of being healthier by being aware of how to use these icons on your body, you know, like water. It's pretty much all water.
Yeah, I mean, and earth and air.
We got a few minerals in there.
Fire, you know. I mean,
but mostly it's water.
Yeah. But it is interesting that it is one of the four, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
all right, okay.
Well, that's how man chose to look at himself like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Practical applications of magic.
Well, health. I mean, you know, for example, you have the option of being sick or talking yourself out of it.
Right.
I mean, for example, your flu, your pneumonia that you had.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get a hook in you, a visual on how to take control of this,
mm-hmm.
You somehow feel real secure because it matches your belief system and you're in a program that is moving you toward your goal of health,
mm-hmm.
not having this phlegm and the possibility of fever and, you know, illness.
Sure.
Well, most people die, by the way, is with pneumonia. You be very careful with yourself.
No, I'm feeling much, much better.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay, so health, but other people are going to say money and, you know, right?
Oh, could it be the secret? Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is, bold and everything. Values, that's what it's about, and your purpose and your intentionality, that's what's going to make you separate from being an animal. And
right.
Your values. And if they're wrong, how to change those values like you would a pair of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
That ability is what I will call magic and is the next generation of sciences.
Oh, amazing. Hey, well, there was a person that was calling. I was going to ask Rick if you want to take a phone call.
Sure,
with you.
I can take those. I'd be fine.
All right, well, if there's someone who's been calling for quite some time, but I didn't want to jump in until we sort of got through the meat of what
That's
we were talking
fine.
About.
Yeah.
So if somebody calls back, we'll bring him on the air. But in the meantime, what about... okay, we I made the mistake earlier of saying black magic versus white magic.
Oh, well, no, it wasn't a mistake.
Well,
it shows me... your foundations that might want to be reviewed and altered a little bit. Because by thinking of something as black, you know, like, boy, I couldn't do that. Well, there's lots of things I couldn't do, but I respect it.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah,
don't have to own it. You don't have to buy into the fact that someone else is doing something you wouldn't do doesn't mean they're wrong.
Right. Again, it goes back to intention and
your purpose. Are you trying to change everybody or just yourself? Are you trying mm-hmm. to make it a better world for yourself or for everybody? What is your purpose and why would you want to make it for everybody when really, before you can make it for anybody, you're going to have to make it for yourself type mm-hmm. of thing? It's like, why would you choose to think of it that way over a different way?
Mm-hmm.
All of those kinds of questions are really, really important to the magician. He has to introspect because otherwise, what do we have that, what is that called? observer bias. Well, or, you know, right, influencing right. the situation. Uh-huh. And you really do not ever want to thwart someone else's will in terms of what they're trying to do.
Understood.
The only time you would do that is when it's against your own.
When it's impinging on your own.
Right, and right. then you have choices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
The thing is, the key is to be aware of it. You know, how much of are we in a matrix? And it
really,
and
how I much mean, more and more, I think that that's closer to the metaphor that's really true.
That's right. And at what level do you observe your freedom, and what level do you see your prisons?
Mm.
And your prisons are a lot of your belief systems. Mm. And if you could go in and surgically change those, doesn't mean you have to get rid of them. I mean, you know, beliefs are from childhood, you know, and they're really important because they make you feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas doubt and something new is more scary. You're not sure what's going to happen. You don't know where it's all going to go. You know, you're not sure how it's all going to come out. And that doubt makes you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the inside and outside the box. But the dialogue that you're trying to form with self, the in the magic, you know, of knowledge and conversation, that part has to do with voice of coyote and voice of reason.
Mm.
One is inside the box, the other is on the outside. It turns out it's the same voice, but from a different perspective, like they have different goals.
Right.
And what you have to do is learn how to use them as tools. So, because stepping out of the box is the only way you're ever going to change.
Right.
And since change is absolutely the law, well, then that means you're going to have to be stepping out of the box a lot of times that you're not thinking you are.
Mm. All right. Hey, remember the Magic Lantern series?
Oh, yes. yes.
Uh-huh. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
You mean, what's his face? And, he wrote a bunch of... He was a magician before me. What's his name? That was
not Jimmy Rocket.
No, not Jimmy Rocket.
Right?
Yeah, you knew Jeff Beck, did you? It was Beck. Yeah, that was Beck out of Oregon. No, this was Magic Lantern was. Gosh,
I should go look in the chat room. Someone's
well,
got
I've got
it
his
now.
Name right there. He was not with Jack Parsons. He was. He did those muggings with bikers. And did a book called Babylon Revisited, which was about all the weird people in Hollywood. Yeah. That's before my time. I know him and have dialogue with him once in a while. He's still alive down in California. I can't think of his name now. It's it's right there.
Oh, it does. That's no big deal. I just thought that it was one
you
that
got
you probably liked.
Not McFarlane. I was going to say McFarlane, but it isn't McFarlane. It's... what's his name? I knew all those people because that's how old I am.
Well,
I
know.
Knew.
Well, that you were hanging out with all these guys. That's
yeah.
I got all these lists of names like Grady McMurtry that you sent
well,
me.
Well, Grady was our caliph after, Grady McMurtry came in. I studied under Phyllis, his wife, Phyllis Seckler. She's the one that started the Abbey of Thelema and the College of Thelema and did
where was
in
that?
The Continuum. Huh?
Where was that?
She was out of Dublin, California.
All right.
She with Helen Parsons Smith. Who was married to Wilfred Smith and then Jack Parsons. She lived in Tahoe. And then Mildred Burlingame. Yeah, the Three Witches of Endor. That's what those three were part of the Agape Lodge of North Hollywood under Aleister Crowley back in 1947. I'm trying to think of the guy's name that did the Magic Lantern series. That was, it's right there. That's how old I'm getting. I'm
well,
forgetting more
I
things.
I should have been able to find it. I was looking on the web to see if I could get it. I can't find it either. But
well, he was the one that did those snuff films of bikers doing snuff films and things back in the 50s. And he wrote Babylon Revisited and, what was his name? He's with Falcon Press. I think they put out some of his stuff. Anyway. There were a bunch of people. They were out of California. That's all out of California area. Then there, of course, was the New York crowd, which was Breeze and those people that became the caliph after Grady died. The caliphate was, you know, given to Breeze in New York. And then, of course, the entire New York lodge which was the Grand Lodge, all moved to Berlin. And in the last 4 years, they took a lot of their artists and things like that from New York City with them. Maybe Neil has got something to say about that. I don't know what that was all about. That would be an interesting question to ask Neil Goldsmith, is what happened in New York 4 years ago. This was before the 9/11. A whole group of magicians left New York City, and they moved, the American Lodge moved to Berlin.
To Germany, yeah.
Well, it's a historical thing. Like, originally it moved from where Crowley was. Because Crowley was part of Golden Dawn back in the 1800s.
Another one of these secret society...
Well, Golden Dawn was the big one in Europe that had everybody in it. I mean, you know, everybody. William and Westcott, Dion Fortune, they said. Samuel McGregor Mathers ran it for a while and was the big hooey-doo. But there was, famous people that were part of it. Yeah, the guy that, Sax Rohmar, for example, that did the Fu Manchu series, was part of the group. And Bulwer Lytton and some others. That they were all scholars, and that's where Crowley came out of that lodge to form what is now the current form of OTO, which is Ordo Templi Orientis, or Order of the Temple of the Orient.
Right.
And basically, that was all based around his grasp of the what we call the Mass of the Holy Ghost, the sacred magics of sex magic, and how you do it to... I have written in detail that ritual in both my Magical and Ritual Use of Herbs and Magical and Ritual Use of Aphrodisiacs. Both of those have the Mass of the Holy Ghost in precise ritual and my interpretation of how it works and you know, where the emphasis is. All of that was part of the work I did for Navy. You know, the intentionality, the how intense is your thought, how many times do you bring it back, you know, to repeat the thought to make it happen. And there's some actual, I came up with some mathematical equations, you know, on how that could work. That was just simply as a visualizing tool like we use in physics.
Amazing. Okay, let me ask you a question about, well, actually this came up in the chat room. People said, well, ask Richard about 666. Is it significant? You mentioned...
Well, it's the name of the beast. Just like 777 is the Antichrist.
Are they not the same?
No. Mm-hmm. Not really. They're different. Intentionality, for one thing.
So how would you describe the beast?
Well, the beast is probably your concept of Satan, your idea of ultimate demise for man.
Your own as an individual.
Yeah, Your personal demons, your things that... you're self-defeating. That's, you know, how you're counterproductive. You actually will, all of us, to some extent, will stop our own successes, literally. Block our own ability to go beyond a certain point because we're afraid of what it might mean to have that kind of responsibility.
Right.
It's part of the growth of being a magician. That's why the Tree of Life is all these different places on it, having like a roadmap in personal development. Well, you have, start with, you know, your gonads, your yisad, you know, your balls, and you move up to your heart center, which is Christ consciousness, and then your throat, which is, you know, there are different places on the Tree of Life that symbolize where we are spiritually with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're in all of these different places, but to greater and lesser extents. We hang out more here, we have a little more lessons to learn there, that kind of thing. The whole thing is to integrate these things into your way of being so that you could, for example, take a... I have, for example, personality character flaws, and I try to use those character flaws now as tools. Like, instead of, it's not... You know, it's a big hammer. Well, that's good for knocking out dents in a char. You know, that kind of thing, a Ford hammer. Well, you know, if you have dysfunctionality that you can't change or choose not to change, because basically I'm beginning to find that my best friends, I like them because of their faults, not in spite of their faults. Well, that's what makes them different in characters, like Randy Couch. He's great, and yet he's a genius. And, that's the that's where it's really at, is to be able to see that genius in people, be able to experience that place with them. That is, it's a wonderful place of enlightenment. It's like a richness that you don't find in the day-to-day. You have to look for that sacred moment or sacred time. That's why you have rituals. That's the purpose of ritual, going from profane into sacred.
Right.
That's what the purpose
the
of ritual
space.
Is all about, is to have a switch so that now I'm going to take my bath and clean my body and I'm going to go into this mystical state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, that's what the churches were designed to do, the cathedrals. To take you out of that space and into this space.
And the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You surround yourself with the imaging that you're trying to enhance, sounds, colors, thought forms.
Right. Okay. All right. This is a little bit on the sinister side, but how certain can people be that world leaders, et cetera, are using magic? You know, leaders of industry, the people running the Federal Reserve, the Vatican, whoever.
The aliens, aliens that control those aliens.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Right. Uh-huh.
Oh, you can't. It is like peeling an onion. There's lots of crying. Well, no.
Right.
Just kidding. But it's like, it's levels of awareness. And with each level comes grief. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm. The thrill of victory and the agony of... that is one of the most magical things that man has, is the ability to feel the physical. And it's like another level of awareness, just like intellectual is another level. There are 8 levels of awareness, and that's what you're trying to do, is have them all be simultaneous, where there's dialogue across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say, well, show me a sign, and all of a sudden you bump your head into a chime. It goes ding-dong. You got it. You know what I mean? The idea of synchronicity, the idea of serendipity. I knew I was looking for that, but I forgot I was looking for that. Mm-hmm. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that awareness.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Let me ask you a question here about... this entrance exam that you sent me.
For the AA, the Order of the Silver Star.
Yeah.
That's the Illuminati test, buddy. Basically, Aleister Crowley has a bunch of codes in his writing. And a lot of people don't even know that. They read Crowley and they either like him or they don't like him, and they use his tarot deck or they do this or they that.
Right.
They don't understand where Libra came from. What does that mean? There's codes and what Crowley did. And it all fits together like a code, like a glove. And that examination is entrance requirement that you pass that before you're even allowed into the College of Thelema, that you understand the codes. And that's what I gave that to you for, is to show you the rigor of magic.
Gosh.
It's quite rigorous.
Yeah, for sure.
Way beyond anything you possibly could have imagined. And your sound is included there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like...
Mm-hmm.
Sator, what does that Sator mean? S-A-T-O-R?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different, that's Saturn, by the way. There's a lot of different words that have other kinds of implication meanings that, when used certain ways, cause things to happen. Like, I can simulate almost any kind of drug experience now using sound and light.
Really?
Yeah.
And
using video feedback system.
Personally, in other words, you've experienced it.
Yeah, where we use German acupuncture equipment to cause changes in your consciousness. By having certain kinds of electromagnetic fields appear at this part of the brain, for example, like we do with dimethyltryptamine, you can cause the consciousness to change.
Wow.
And like a drug experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, by releasing oxygen, for example, have a speed enhancement. You can do narcotics the same way with having sex. and you have the, what is it? What do they call it in Postcards from the Edge? And Dolphins released. I love that.
And Dolphins, yeah.
And Dolphin, yeah. I thought that was great. Endorphins and Ecstalines. But you see, it's a way of relating to your physical body and its relationship to spiritual body. And spirituality is not what you do, it's how you do it. The quality in which you go about your personal pursuit, that's where you get closer to the Lord. That's where the value of all of it is at, is not what you're doing, but how you're doing it. That's why magic is an art form.
Very, very cool. All right. Okay. A lot of people want to talk more about sex magic.
I'm sure they do.
Go figure, right?
Goes right down into the basics. All right.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward, apparently, but...
Well, not pretty straightforward. Everybody.
No pun intended.
It's one of the neurologic circuits. What do you think? Survival circuit. Okay, so sex magic, it was found that you can, if you do it correctly using tantric forms of meditation, can heighten the level or intensity of orgasm. And, of course, the intensity is part of the equation that I've developed in terms of how the thought form goes into the physical world regarding telepathy and ESP and precognition and astral projection. And the intensity, if you can train your body to go right up to that very point and then balloon that out into another universe, that's how you move, make psyche into magic, into matter. That place where psyche becomes real. And that is, I believe, done through microtubules and the way water goes through microtubules. I believe that's how man's doing it. That's why we're on a water planet. And, you know, with Schumann's resonance and all the different little things we have, we're just little resonant cavity oscillators that are vibrating. And whether you choose to see the heart as a physical pump inside your body or you see it as a sound wave outside the body, like they do in Star Trek, it's the same thing. It is the same thing. That heart is a sound wave at this level of the hologram.
Right. Amazing. All right, Rick, we're going to take one more break, okay?
Yes.
We'll come back, and we've got a few things to talk about. I've got a couple things I got to catch up on from the show. Last time you were on, somebody's sort of holding our feet to the fire, so we're going to have to answer them.
Okay.
And then that'll be kind of fun, though, actually. And then we'll have 15 or 20 to, I don't know, just
mess around.
Wrap it up, mess around, okay?
Yeah.
All right, thanks again. Back in a minute. Everybody, Richard Allen Miller, amazing conversation as always. On the web, richardallenmiller.com, nwbotanicals.org or .com?
.org.
Yeah, nwbotanicals.org and a number of other sites. I'll have all this stuff linked up on my site after the program, okay? All right, it is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're going to hear one more here from The Ruse. This one is called, appropriately, Everything Comes with a Price. It's Mike. You'll be back with us in just a few minutes, and we'll have Richard Allen Miller for one more segment.
You feel when you win and you feel, and no one else.
the ruse. Everything comes with a price. And it's the truth. My name is Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is and has been for the last couple hours, Richard Alan Miller. Wonderful stuff, and I appreciate all your time tonight, Rick.
I just walked back in. I figured out who it is. It's Kenneth Anger.
Yeah, you weren't going to let it go, were you?
Huh?
I said you weren't going to let it go, were you?
I wasn't going to let it go. No, that's what magic is. You don't let things go. It's like physics. You don't give up.
Ah, wonderful. Okay.
Kenneth Anger.
This is the author of the whole Magic Lantern series.
He did his last video is The Man We Want to Hang, which is the artwork of Aleister Crowley.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, with Baphomet in it and all of that. So that
what about magic through artwork?
That's what I'm... That's where it's most wonderful. A lot of people express their selves through painting.
Mm.
You know, it isn't. They're not doing paintings for other people. They're doing them for themselves.
Right.
It's a way to bring something out, you know, that's inside themselves out
right.
into
right.
their own vision. And, right. and that's what artwork is about. That's why it's a process. It's not about a final product.
Yeah, I know a guy who calls his artwork two-dimensional machines with no moving parts.
Huh. Yeah, I know. I've seen that kind of stuff. That's kind of interesting.
All right, let's see.
I thought you'd enjoy this show tonight.
Oh, I really have. I mean, it's right...
Right up your alley.
Right up my alley. I love it.
The idea of... You can change things if you want. You can change them.
Yeah.
It's possible to do this.
Well, and I think that this is a big deal these days because if you don't change it, somebody else is going to change it for you, apparently.
Well, what's the current movie? Is it Horror on Elm Street? Whatever.
Oh,
Bush?
God. Oh, yeah, the latest greatest.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better until there's this mass exodus of people on Earth because that is, and unfortunately, the single prime directive of the New World Order, whether they're good guys or bad guys trying to control or not, their prime directive, before there's any advancement in evolution of consciousness, technology, or medicine, that's why we have shitty medicine and all that, is that the population on Earth has to be cut by one half.
Yeah.
That is the prime directive of the New World Order. And until that happens, nothing else can happen for men.
Well, this brings me to a point. A number of people brought up on in the chat room, they say, Mike, myself and a number of others are interested in having this addressed. Last time Richard was on the program, at the 82-minute, 30-second mark, there's too many people on Earth, Rick said. The New World Order needs to thin it. And so February they're going to release a virus.
Oh, I suggested that there is going to be the on the streets, what we hear, you know how you hear these little rumors, is that something's going to happen shortly.
Do you think it's already happened? I mean, there's a lot of people sick around where I live, here in Missouri.
Yeah, I don't want to go there. You know what I mean, sort of?
I guess there's no reason to speculate.
Well, the thing is, see, it isn't going to empower you. It isn't going to make things better.
Right, you got to get healthy one way or the other.
So... What I'm going to try to suggest is that the New World Order value is going to be in health, not money. That as much health as you have is as wealthy as you are considered on the planet, your value in the scheme of things.
Hmm.
And if you have juice, that's going to be very important.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think that that's going to become as important as money is now. That your health, your literal health. And health has many dimensions,
sure.
not just physical health.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they all sort of go together, though.
There is a relationship.
Mm.
Uh-huh. That's why we call this the series for the evolution of consciousness. In Power Tools, I have a chapter on sound, you know, and how to use virtual audio and continuous breathing. Ha! So the same thing is on sound. Continuous breathing is a technique that can give you personal power, and so can foods, so can brain drivers, so can a number of things that you can do. Like, for example, if you chose to see your life as archetypal in nature, where you're having encounters, you can play those like what we, in magic, that's called pathworking, and you can change yourself. You can change your soul.
All right.
Personality.
Wow, okay. We haven't talked at all about the relationship between the shaman and the magician.
A shaman is a way, way, way low-level trance place where art has to do with dreams and myth and so on, and syntactic modes of consciousness, which is the art forms used, biofeedback, hypnosis, blah, 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 blah. There's where you're using tools where you're consciously changing consciousness with your mind rather than a shaman, which is by definition, now this is from Mircea Eliade, is a psychically unstable person that has received the call to religious life, and as a result of that call, goes through periods of solitude where they then merge back into society with the power, real or assumed, of passing at will into states of mental dissociation, i.e., they can put their consciousness in that bird that's flying above their head.
Mm.
But the shaman has no memory of it when he does it, and that's why it's called a trance state, whereas a magician is totally aware of what he's doing and is doing it with intentionality rather than allowing it to just happen.
Mm. All right.
And
okay,
so a shaman is a lesser form of magician, kind of like a sorcerer or shaman. And then as you move up the line to an alchemist and then a magician. And magic is the highest form. That's the place where you're trying to form dialogue with yourself. The person that you think of as God, of what in your mind's eye that you think is all this, everything, that's the other nine-tenths of your cerebral cortex. And God, of course, real God, is way beyond that. It's not knowable. But what is knowable is what you're trying to form union with self or self-realization, self-actualization. Knowledge and conversation is what we call it in magic, and where you have dialogue with your higher self and have agreements and understandings that you're not crashing against the walls and like a little brat trying to get its way. Because consciousness is not real, and any more than any other altered state is. And we're just the consciousness part, along for the ride. It's not the boss.
Right, right. Very, very interesting. Okay. All right. People want to know what they can do to get healthy. We talked a lot about that.
Foods. There's foods you can eat. That's my second book. After the first book on ESP and hypnosis comes out, the second book is called Power Tools for the 21st Century, and there'll be 8 chapters based on 8 icons of your biosurvival circuit. It's all based on the I Ching, but it's, you know, you've got earth, air, fire, and water, and, you know, a little bit of swamp and a little bit of fog. And so those are the quans. The quan of air is called continuous breathing and virtual audio. And there are power tools out there that, when used correctly, become super tools. Like a brain driver allows you to go to a place of witnessing your behavior, and which case you can change a value just like that. And imagine trying to change a value at my age, at 64, that's almost impossible. But if you are able to witness your behavior and watching yourself do something, and it's not working, so why would you want to continue doing that?
Right, right, when you see it from a different perspective.
That's right. And that's what a brain driver does, is it allows you to set up shop in a different part of the brain. And I'm going to suggest that the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of 5 space. That means you've got all possible realities there of anything you could possibly imagine, from you being the king of Siam, I am, to, you know, whatever. You have that ability of going there if you can move your consciousness to that place.
Why is it that so few have been able to, or no one has been able to?
Well, because most people have also been told, you know, correctly, I just turned my computer off, here it goes,
right.
There it is, dang, 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 dang,
dun, 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 dun.
That you have only certain ways you can be.
Right.
And these were given to you at, probably before you came out of the womb.
Right.
Your
so
mom.
They're so imprinted.
Yeah, right. Exactly. A priori. And because it's a priori, it is burned in as an engram. And to change something like that is, like, virtually impossible. Because first you have to be able to see it, you know, much less grok it, and then decide you're... Now, this doesn't mean you get rid of these values. But they may not be appropriate for what you're trying to do, like a job interview or whatever. And you have to take that pair of bell-bottoms I have. I have a pair of bell-bottoms with 32-inch waist. I'm never going to fit in them again. Hmm. But do you think I would throw those pair of bell-bottoms away? Not on your life, man. It represents part of my life that is, like, really, really important to me,
right.
Just like a belief system is.
Right, right.
So you metaphorically would fold them up, put them away nicely. You don't have to trot them around because they may not be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth Anger. I knew I'd come up with that.
That was awesome. That was awesome. Yeah. Well, you were involved with all kinds of these people. I mean,
yeah.
I'm looking at the list here, and we haven't talked about it a lot, but you can just mention any of these. Tom Little.
Tom Lytle was...
Or Lytle, yeah, PIE.
Yeah, he was editor of Psychedelic Monographs and Essays.
Yeah.
And is now... in Florida, he's living in Florida as a transient. He's actually in a rescue home house.
Really?
Penniless, yeah. Drugs. He's borderline, and like most of us are. You know?
Right.
Is that the right way? Borderline.
No, I think it's true.
To be in a hospital.
No, I think people sort of overemphasize or oftentimes don't realize how tenuous our grasp really is, you know.
It's really, the difference, that's the amazing thing. The difference between being sane and insane can be measured in micrograms.
Huh.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I would be scared as an alien studying us as a species because we're so unpredictable.
That's
just
for sure.
By a few micrograms.
Mm.
Of change in brain chemistry, and we're completely different.
That's so true, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, that's
yeah. If it's the right
kissy.
One, right? If it's the right neurotransmitter.
Was it David Icke that said that's why the reticulin, these vegetable people were studying us.
Right.
They couldn't understand how such a tenuous life form could exist.
Mm.
You know, is that we were the difference between being sane and insane was measured in micrograms.
Right.
And actually... sanity and insanity is, again, based on values.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Hey,
you know the most... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. There's someone on the chat who's been asking all night about the Pleiades, and I'm not sure if that would have...
Pleiades is a star system that has to do with Dogon Society and Cirrus, the planet Cirrus and Pleiades. There's cults out there that think they're getting channels from these aliens or higher life forms. It's a valid thing. The only thing I would remind that person to do is if he's going to channel like that, he absolutely remembers to draw a magic circle around himself before he does that.
Hmm.
Because you're, again, like with Action with Spirits, we talked about John Dee, all of them talked about a magic circle around you when you talk with angels or demons. You don't know where the information's coming from, and your only point of reference in the way of assimilating it, is that magic circle you're in.
Hmm, expand on that a little bit.
Well, the magic, Walt Disney knew about it with the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know, you don't do anything outside a magic circle. This is a visualization of a piece of land that you have consecrated for yourself as safe. It's a magic circle. You draw the white light around yourself, same thing, but it's a magic circle. That means that if you're inside it and you're starting to channel these things, you have a reference point of being able to grill the source of information, whereas if you were outside the circle, you wouldn't.
Mm.
You wouldn't know if it was coming from the Lord or from the devil or from whatever.
All right, so you have discernment inside your circle.
That's correct. You have the circle of this is me and that's you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important part of distinguishing the switch of what is coming from you and what is coming from somewhere else. And is that place somewhere else, even though it seems real groovy, is that hostile?
Mm.
you have no way of knowing.
Right.
And it doesn't, some extent, it doesn't matter as long as you're not consorting with demons, which means you're inside a circle.
Hmm.
There it is.
Well,
first rule of magic.
We're at the end of the show, so we might as well talk about personal experiences. But I've had, certainly in my own adventures, I have a medicine wheel, you know, and I sort of practice the Lakota way at home. But when I'm in my circle, you know, when I'm inside the medicine wheel, the information is much more easier to classify, maybe is a good way to put it.
Yeah, the Northern Cheyenne moved up into the first reserve up north of Washington, up into Canada. That's where they settled as the first reserve with your Sioux, Schwab, and Thompson. That's where all that came from,
mm-hmm.
was the Northern Cheyenne out of Basin. And their plea to get away from the U.S. government and the war.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada gave them sanctuary. And interesting. I have... But they're still all outlaws. They're not criminals.
No.
But they're outlaws.
Just outlaws, yeah.
That means they live by their own rule.
Yeah, they live outside the law, yeah.
Their own rule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they make their own laws and what's important. That's why most people live in the country in the first place.
Right, that's true. That's why I live where I live.
That's right. You have certain ways you want to be. You want to take a piss outside in your yard rather than in the bathroom. I mean, you have your own country place, that kind of thing. It's all a metaphor. For me, I like to walk around naked. I'm not a naturalist and I'm not a nudist, but I don't like the cumbersomeness of denim jeans.
Right.
And so when I get home, they come off, but that doesn't mean when people come to my door, I go there naked. I used to do that, and now I've been beaten down, and now I...
that's great.
Okay,
let me ask you a personal question. I mean, how big a part is magic in your own life, in your own
way?
It is
the only thing that's significant in my life. Before I am a physicist, before I'm a scientist or an herbalist or an agriculturalist or your Mark Trail, you know, your MacGyver guy, I am first and foremost a magician. And so you will always have my word, as that's all I've got.
Mm. Yeah, that back to, we've come full circle.
Well, it's all values. It's different kinds of sets of values.
Right.
And the way of being. And divine right. You know, like, who gets to do what in the tribe? By divine right. Who does it best? That's the way that works.
Right. Who does it best?
Who wants to do it, but who does it best?
Right.
I unfortunately wash dishes really good, so. Just kidding.
Oh, well, you've got a lot of things you do pretty darn well, and every time I talk with you, I'm fascinated. So I will let you wrap it up. We got a couple minutes, and you can tell people anything you like, and then we'll...
You know, the Earth is going through a transition. Yeah, I think that in the next 15 years, we're going to see the United States fragment into probably 9 unified provinces or countries, where you choose where you want to live predicated on how many civil rights you want to give up. Florida, of course, watch all the high school shootings that are going on. Oregon. They occur in Idaho. But they're going to occur more in highly populated areas. Like, where would you like to go if you're going to go into a fast food restaurant? Do you want to go down in Bakersfield, or would you feel safer up in Longmont, Colorado?
It's
changing. Things are changing. And I'm really concerned about our civil rights.
Yeah.
You know, I see a lot of that being lost. And, of course, the values, like property, housing, and how people think they can buy something, put some paint on it, and sell it for 3 times as much money. Where do they think the money's coming from?
Mm-hmm.
I did a remark. I write these columns in Herb Things, you know, as an expert, and someone was talking to me about wildcrafting ginseng and how it got up to $800 for wildcrafted ginseng. And I'm sitting there saying, yeah, but how many people are going to be able to go out and make an $800 root? 2? 20? What about the other 50 people in the neighborhood? And the idea is wrong about going for the quick buck and things. I think right now the most important thing you have is your health, and that your health has to do with sanity, and not just physical things, but your emotional and intellectual parts of it. like listening to radio shows, reading, and being challenged with thoughts. I think all of that has to do with health, and that is going to become way more significant in value than money will be and things that you have. I think that at some point, what you have is your health.
Let me ask you another question with regard to sickness and disease and all this stuff. If you had to, and maybe you don't want to do this, but I'm going to give you the opportunity because people want to, they want me to push you on it. But I have two, I have two questions. One is, if you had to put a number on the percentage of diseases, viruses, things that are floating out there in the air that we're being exposed to, that were actually made in somebody's laboratory.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the great majority.
Okay, well, the comment on that would be, the American Indians had 40 known diseases, and they had a cure for each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gotten so sophisticated in our quantification of the blood and, mm-hmm. and different things, we now have more than 40,000 known diseases, and some of them don't have cures. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Right.
The difference between health and healing. Healing implies sickness right off the get, mm-hmm. whereas health could be someone could be in perfect health even though they're not, because their homeostasis or balance meant for them to be ill. Remember, in psychology, illness is a way that your subconscious is trying to talk to your consciousness, and once you get it, then there's no need for the pneumonia anymore. How's that sound, Michael?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's the way to look at it.
Wraps that one up, does it?
Yeah,
think about that. That's a good one to ponder. Is what was the lesson that you were trying to talk to yourself about and the purpose for the pneumonia? What did you learn from that?
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important for people to realize that, you know, whether they release a virus in February or not, whether Richard said they did or not, or whether we thought they were going to, look, there's plenty of stuff that's being released, whether Richard's talking about it or not.
Well, that part, I can tell you this. Joseph Campbell put it succinctly when he said, quote, "When you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, the apocalypse has already occurred. Hmm. It is perpetual in its potential."
Mm-hmm.
It's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And so the apocalypse is ever present.
That's
ever
the truth.
Present.
That's the truth.
And you're still alive because you are conscious.
You know, and the other thing is that, and my relief isn't here, so I can talk a couple minutes overtime here. But you know, the whole business with evolution is something that I realized quite a while back was, you know, someone's always trying to kill you.
Oh, well,
right?
Or something.
That's why living
in the woods is so awareness-oriented, is that how hostile it is when you live in the woods and have to compete
mm-hmm.
with animals.
Yeah.
Like a grizzly bear that wants your body.
Right, and that persimmon that's hanging
intense.
Over your head, yeah.
Well,
yeah. All right. Well, Rick, it has been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Cool.
And and we will talk again, my friend.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, I'll give out the websites again once I say goodbye, okay?
Okay.
All right, take care, and thanks to all you.
You bet.
All right, bye-bye.
My pleasure, by the way.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. Richard Allen Miller. Hope you enjoyed the program. It's been a wild one, as it always is with him, and he's wonderful. So, at least that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. nwbotanicals.org, richardallenmiller.com, and a couple other ones that I will link up to in the archives, okay? All right, everybody, it has been a pleasure, and I hope you all enjoyed yourselves, and we'll come back and do it next week. I think I'm just going to do the program by myself next week and talk a little bit about psychedelic shamanism, and then we'll see where that leads us, okay? We'll maybe take some phone calls or I don't know what else. Anyway, it is time for one last piece of music. This is called Medicated Lie, and it's a band called Percival. We'll catch y'all in a week.
Oh,